A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome on into another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. In the last couple of weeks, we've been live outside of Emmett Smart Home Arena, just across the street here, broadcast out. I think Scott got the address right. On the corner of Vivint and KSL.
Broadcast That's, house.
I like that.
That was just a full-on address change.
You know what I like is looking at all these jerseys that say Mitchell on the back.
So many people like, here to see
and then
Scott.
And then there's the bogey.
Yeah, there's a boy on my
I can't believe how popular you still are here.
I know. It's
incredible.
I know.
We've got a lot going on here. And, yes, the Jazz are going to tip off in just about an hour and I'd say an hour and 10 minutes or so after the first game of the evening finishes up and after the TV stuff figures itself out. We are going to be out here all night tonight doing the show, 7 to 9 p.m. And joining us right now in this first segment of the program is Jeremiah Jensen. He is here just in time for the 7:05 cut for the very first time maybe in the show's history. Let's go ahead and do that 7:05 cut.
Top sports stories. The cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so here's what we have. Brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Struggling with ED? Sick of pills? Visit wasatchmedicalclinic.com for a free offer. Don't show up with your bags if you're like these two gentlemen right outside the arena. Walking your wives and girlfriends' bags back to the car, not a good look. We'll
this
see.
This is the best part of our
it
show.
It is my
Watching
favorite.
People walk
yeah.
back with their bags to the
hey,
car.
Hey, you know what? It's important to read that that email that they send you from the ticket from Vivint or from Ticketmaster when they go, by the way, new bag policy. You can't bring one. So
you're doing a public service.
Yeah,
right
you're gonna be okay.
And these
everybody.
Men are holding these purses very well.
I think they've looked a little bit awkward because it's like I don't want to put the strap over my shoulder. You know,
I think they should just go all in, man. Enjoy it. Right. Put the bag where it belongs.
Yeah, there's another one.
JJ, game one. JJ, game one of the Clippers and the Jazz in the Western Conference semifinals. We are extremely excited about this one. Not excited about the Mike Conley news, of course. Yesterday it was questionable. Today the Jazz said he's not going to be playing in Game 1. Right off the bat, what kind of an impact does that have on Game 1 tonight with the Clippers in town?
Well, it's a tremendous impact. I mean, Mike Conley does such a great job with switching, and he does on defense, and he does such a great job on offense getting the Jazz where they need to go. And so you take Mike Conley out of the lineup, and all of a sudden, you know, there's this – I don't know, this calming influence he has where they're just so settled on offense when he's in there.
Yeah.
You take him out, and I think things can get a little chaotic. These guys can get a little bit into iso ball. You know, Donovan tries to do too much of his own thing. Boyan tries to do much of his own thing.
Sure.
When Mike's out there, he keeps the blender going.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what they need to do to win. Well, so that's what has me concerned tonight with Mike being out.
Yeah, and he's a guy that hits clutch shots. You know, he's a clutch performer.
Oh,
he's
huge.
A guy that's gonna come through for you in the playoffs, and that's what you need. You need those guys with the confidence and the ability to finish games and to be big in big moments. And that to me, I think, is what you're gonna miss most. Where he's not out there, you know, creating shots and scoring points.
Joe knows the pick and roll. Joe does a really good job with that Rudy pick and roll, which we know is going to be a big deal. But, you know, what do you want out of Joe Ingles? Does he have to replace that 18 points a game that they were getting from Mike Conley? Obviously, the three-point shooting from Joe is usually around that 40 to 45% anyway from him. So I don't know what you expect out of Joe Ingles, who will likely, or who is going to get the start tonight.
So I think that's the – Joe will go. Joe's going to – and defensively, this actually could help the Jazz a little bit if Joe's 100% healthy. But this is where Quinn makes the adjustment is you don't have Mike, so – you need to have Joe Ingles with the ball running that pick and roll. I make the Clippers are really, really lacking at center. How do they handle Rudy Gobert cutting to the hoop? How do they handle Derek Favors cutting to the hoop? If you get Joe Ingles going with the bigs in that high pick and roll, I think that's going to really create some opportunities for the Jazz offensively. You're going to get Donovan open looks. You're going to get Boyan open looks. Jordan Clarkson going to get open looks. Now, where does that point production that you're going to get, that you need to make up for with Mike Conley come from? Jordan Clarkson has to be the sixth man of the year tonight.
Oh, okay.
Jordan Clarkson can't play like he did towards the end of the season. Jordan can't be inconsistent like he was against the Grizzlies. He's got to be on tonight. That's going to be where they make up for the lack of point production with Mike. That's where I see it coming from.
This team has been prepared to win now, right? They've developed over the years. They've had that playoff experience, and it's now. And so I want to see an attitude tonight. I don't want to see this like tense attitude. I want to see this confident attitude. I want to see this, hey, we're the best team in the NBA. We have the best regular season record, and this is why we get it, is for these moments right here, so we can start off this series at home, make a statement not only to the Clippers but to the whole NBA that we're here to win now, and this moment isn't bigger than us. The Jazz have done well without Mike Conley. I mean, his team has been prepared for this. They've had stretches where they've had guys out. As long as Donovan Mitchell was playing when Mike Conley was out, the Jazz were 8-2. So the Jazz will be able to make those adjustments. And of course, the guys that have to fill up the space, like you said, JJ, they have to show up, and they all have to show up tonight.
How disappointing was it in Game 1 against the Grizzlies the way the Jazz played? They did not look like a playoff team. It looked like one of those bad games they played at the end of the season against a team that wasn't in the playoffs. They can't have that tonight. The intensity's got to be there. The guys have to be ready. They have to step it up. Now, the Clippers could be a tired team. Take advantage of that. You're bringing the Clippers into this playoff environment where this place is going to be packed. It's going to be electric again. They're going to be feeling that.
Yeah.
Take advantage of it. Jump on these guys early. Play with energy. Play with the pass and have that make up for Mike Conley missing. Have that energy that you didn't have in Game 1 in the last series. If they don't, this is where they could get punished for it.
You've seen a kind of a role switch, too, over the last couple of years, last few with the Clippers and the Jazz. The Jazz are now the team that are not, like, trying to, you know, upset the Clippers or kind of sneak into that conversation. Now it's the Clippers who've struggled against the Jazz this year. They're the four seed. The Jazz have that home court advantage, obviously. So now with those roles reversed, they've beaten the Clippers this year, and the Clippers have had no answers, as you put it. So how do they keep that going? How do they pick up where they left off from the regular season with this team?
Just execute their offense. I mean, keep that ball moving. If the shots fall tonight, the Jazz win. I think it's really that simple. If they shoot the three the way that they can, if they make 15 or 23-point shots, then they win with ease. And the Clippers can't keep up with them when it comes to three-point shooting. How the Clippers could keep up is if the Jazz miss their threes and Kawhi mid-ranges them to death and Kawhi scores 40 and Paul George goes for 30.
you can't all of a sudden just change who you are.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and the Jazz have to execute. They have to be who they are. They have to rely on what they've developed. I mean, they've developed this from top to bottom, this lineup, this structure, this makeup of players. And they can't turn away from that. And I think sometimes coaches will overthink things and they'll try to do too much. And it's like, trust and believe the person that you brung to the dance and dance with her, and the Jazz will be just fine.
Dance with who you brung.
Got a prom reference in this segment. I was not expecting that, but
I feel like a lot.
You're right. You're right.
It could be, you know, it could be harvest dance.
No, I got
Sadie Hawkins.
A lot of stuff that they
pick your favorite dance, whatever it might be.
A lot of Springville.
The analogy still applies.
Going on there. All right, JJ, we're gonna cut you loose here.
Okay.
You can go back into the station. We're gonna all be watching this thing. Of course, we're just about an hour now from tip-off of the Jazz and the Clippers. Looking forward to this one. All the Clippers beat writers who've come on with us have basically said, yeah, the Jazz are going to lose this series. The Clippers are going to take this one. I don't know where that's coming from.
I don't. The Jazz are the number one seed, and they had the best record in the NBA. They have the 17th best point differential in NBA history.
Yes.
Why are they not getting the respect they deserve?
Andrew Greif of the LA Times is next.
Ask Andrew.
We're going to see what Andrew thinks about this series, too. JJ, thanks for hanging out.
You got it.
Fun pregame with JJ here. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back after news traffic. No, not news traffic weather. Just a regular old break. And we'll come back live from out right outside of Vivint Smart Home Arena across the street from the stadium. Jazz game one versus the Clippers tonight. Stay right here with us on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
Hey, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery on the corner of Vivint and Broadcast House.
There you go.
And the game is going to be underway here in a short period of time. I can't tell you, Alex, I'm so excited. I love the playoffs. I love when it matters. I love when things get intense. And looking very forward to, of course, this whole series. And here's something maybe I need to prepare you for.
Oh, I
there
need to prepare
are going
something?
To be yeah. moments. There are going to be moments that we're going to go,
it's over.
It's over.
It's
this
over.
Is ugly. This is bad. And the Clippers, you know, they experienced that in their first series against the Dallas Mavericks.
Yes.
And they looked ugly early, and they were down to
down
elimination
3-2.
Game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ugly, but you just got to hang in there till the very, very end.
I think Paul George today was talking about that just being in survival mode thing. And,
it,
you know, they're there, and they got through it, and, you know, when it's all reset and you're at game one of the Western Conference semis, like, who cares what happened in the last round? I mean, I know everyone's talking about how tired one team might be over another. Who cares? It's a new round. No games to no games, and there you are. Kicking off this segment here with us, first-time guest on the program, Andrew Greif covers the Clippers for the LA Times. Andrew, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Listen, Salt Lake City is absolutely pumped, and the Western Conference Semis is not some place that the Jazz faithful think that this team is capable of only arriving there. They think that they're going to go all the way on this one. Everybody else doesn't seem to think so. What do you think about this Jazz team taking on this Clippers team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're really dangerous for the Clippers because so much of what the Clippers do well in terms of their not only that they shoot the ball well, but they have so many guys who do it, the volume of it. I think that's something that makes Utah so good, obviously, throughout the year. You know, you can't just stop one guy or two guys or even take away a third option. They have smart playmakers who can spray the ball out to a number of guys once they get in the paint. And then defensively, obviously, you know what Rudy Gobert can do. And I just think that obviously the Mike Conley injury, keeping out of game one, is a key thing. But I still think that this is a really tough matchup for the Clippers. And obviously, during the regular season, we saw that. Even when this team was both teams were at full strength in the last meeting, the Clippers barely squeaked by. So I think it's very even. I go back and forth on what I think how the series will go. But I think this is a dream matchup for me just because the amount of like veteran savvy and shooting there is on the floor.
So the Jazz had the best record in the NBA for pretty much the whole season, maybe 2 days. They did not hold that spot. Yet no one in the national media, no one outside of Utah, maybe no one outside of Salt Lake City gives the Jazz any credit or feels that they're maybe a serious, serious contender to win a championship. Why do you think that is?
You know, maybe because they just have a collection of guys who have not really done it before. You know, I think that maybe that's something with the Clippers. This is a franchise that has clearly never done it before. But once Kawhi Leonard got here, it sort of gave them a sheen of credibility because, well, at least that guy knows what it takes, right? And Ty Lue obviously had that same credibility as well.
Right.
Maybe that's why. I think that obviously I would generally say that people who write off the Jazz so quickly just haven't watched them play very much. I think that's probably the simplest answer, the Occam's razor of why that opinion is out there. Because when you watch Utah, you think this is a really good team. You know, they have the veteran savvy, they have the young legs and Donovan, the explosiveness, the steadiness. I love that, you know, I think the top seven guys came back from last year's roster, so they have the continuity. I mean, they have really it all.
Kawhi Leonard, obviously, as you said, brought that championship kind of we know how to get this thing done, and having Paul George, obviously, alongside, that's a huge deal. Those guys on the wing just scare the the absolute Dickens out of the Jazz fans.
The bejeebers out of the Jazz fans.
Bejeebers scare. If playoff Paul shows up and everybody is like, I mean, it could be really nasty, but Kawhi has this thing too where he is such a good player. What does Donovan Mitchell have to do against Kawhi to kind of keep that down, squelch what he can do against the Jazz?
I mean, it's a tough cover. I think that the thing that's made PG and Kawhi in particular probably more of a headache to game plan for this year is that the fact that they are not I wouldn't say more willing playmakers, because last year we saw their assist numbers rise as well. But this year they really went up, and I think that you saw in game 7, Kawhi had 9 assists, Paul had 10. They've really been challenged this year by Ty Lue not to just be the shot makers, you know, kind of the ball stoppers who can do it, obviously, as well as anybody in terms of getting their own shot and making their shot, but really involving teammates, knowing that the focus is going to be on them. Chauncey Billups, the assistant coach of the Clippers, obviously the longtime Pistons star, he's an assistant coach who has worked with Paul a lot this year in terms of thinking like a point guard, playing like a point guard. So I think the tough thing for any defense is that, yes, while those two guys are elite scorers, and we saw that in first round, especially with Kawhi in game 6 when he had 45, they are just as capable this year and probably better positioned than ever in their respective careers to find the open guy and spray the ball out to that, you know, fifth option. On a team, mind you, who they had 9 guys shooting 40% or better from 3 this year.
Do you know who the Clippers are this year? I mean, there were a lot of injuries, a new coach trying to figure everything out. Is that an ever-evolving thing, or who are the Clippers?
Yeah, I think they're a tough team. I think that they are a team that we are all wondering what kind of backbone they would have after last year's playoffs, and they really showed it in the playoffs against Dallas where they came back. So I think that we can say that, you know, they're long and athletic, but they're pretty tough too.
As we speak with Andrew Greif here for the LA Times, covers the Clippers, one of the big things that's come up, of course, is the tough cover that is Rudy Gobert. He's not an offensive threat typically, but this is a place where the pick and roll is difficult to cover if you do not have a big guy to match that big guy underneath for the Jazz. So what do the Clippers have to do to make sure and keep Rudy Gobert just a defensive threat and nothing on the offensive side of things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he is obviously someone that you have to game plan for. And, you know, they like the ability to get in the paint offensively and spray the ball out. But that won't really I think the fact if they can get in the paint and they don't shoot at the rim, which they didn't do a whole lot this year, that won't be like a big change from their usual game plan. And then when Rudy's on offense, I think the key is how do you keep from pulling in too far from the corners and allowing that spray out pass for the three-pointers, for the Jazz shooters. You know, I think that's a big thing that Ty talks about. They want to take away that corner three-pointer. But can you really do that when you have to honor Rudy's position there and in the middle?
Andrew Greif, the LA Times, covering the Clippers and giving us a little bit of insight as to this game 1 with the Jazz and the Clippers tipping off in just about probably 25 to 45 minutes, depending on how this first game goes. We appreciate it, and we thank you for being on the program, and we're looking forward to an awesome series.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's take the break here. We'll come back, news, traffic, and weather right now. When we return, we've got more to talk about. Scott's going to give his thoughts on how this series is going to go. I think you may be buoyed up by how Scott feels about this. Usually he's the pessimist, and I'm kind of the guy who lifts up everybody else. We'll see how this thing goes. All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back. News, traffic, weather, as I said, and we'll be right back here at the corner of Vivint and KSL Broadcast House. Game 1 of the Clippers and Jazz right across the street, tipping off in about 30 minutes. Stay with us.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It is KSL's unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. We're back here on the Plaza. Game 1 of the Clippers and the Jazz. Every time we came out here on the Plaza, Scott, there was a basketball game that the Jazz played the Memphis Grizzlies with. And my recollection was we weren't here for Game 1. Loss. We were here for games. We were here for game 3, and we were here for game 5, the lockout game. And those were both wins, of course. And so I think that this is a good sign. Us being outside of Vivint Smart Home Arena and taking out the Jazz.
We're an essential component to success for the Jazz.
Did you still get the vibe from Andrew Greif from the LA Times that that's nice for you guys?
Completely.
That's very cute.
We definitely
for you,
got
Utah
the
Jazz.
We definitely got the USC. I want to say, well, no one's watching Utah Jazz. I'm like, it's because we got to go all the way up on the mountain and hold up the antenna so we can get three stations.
Now he goes, and he's like, I think it's fun. This team is very fun, and if teams haven't seen this Utah Jazz team play, well, certainly they'll be surprised. They have decent shooters, and you're going, man, I am so sick of. Now, I don't think he was. I mean, he wasn't that deliberate, but he was definitely like. Yeah, I think the Clippers present a real problem for the Jazz. And he goes, even when they were full strength, you know, the Clippers, they just barely got the Jazz.
You go, yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
That's that fake nice stuff.
That's exactly right. So, man, you guys put a good fight against us. That's what they do in the South in those football games. So,
but there is some truth to some of the things he said, and that is that
such as.
The Jazz don't have a bona fide superstar.
They're getting there with Donovan.
I understand that, and I believe that's what this year's playoffs is all about.
Right.
Is there's going to be an emerging new team. There's going to be some emerging new stars. You can see it with some of these young players, like you know Ja Morant and Luka Doncic and Donovan Mitchell. I mean, this is the next wave of great players. For the Utah Jazz, just the NBA in general, but where it's defined is which one of those players, which one of those young rising stars is going to be the one that rises up, and I just feel like Donovan Mitchell is that guy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is it because it really took Kawhi? I mean, we knew how good he was in San Antonio, but it really took him being the guy instead of playing third, the third guy. James Harden took him going to Houston, being his own guy.
Yeah.
Now, in his case, he didn't win a championship in Houston, but he put up such insane numbers, he became kind of his own thing. In Donovan's case, does he become a superstar if the Jazz get to the finals or even win a championship? Is that like automatic gilded superstar status?
There's no question that, and he's primed for that in the event that, that happens for the Utah Jazz.
Does Rudy become a superstar too if they win?
But what's great about superstar teams. You look at great teams and it's not just a player. It's a player that's supported by a cast of really, really good players around them. And they're players that hit those clutch shots. They're players that do those special things. You look at the Bulls and they had role players. That Dennis Rodman, and he had a specific responsibility, and it wasn't to be the offensive scorer. He's a guy to go in and get rebounds. And Rudy Gobert is that defensive specialist for the Jazz, but he's also an offensive weapon, and he can give you 13 to 20 points a game and probably going to be on the higher end in this series because of the miss and match. But don't be too surprised if the Clippers come out and say, we're taking Rudy Gobert away. We're going to make somebody else beat us. And the teams that have someone else that can beat them are the teams that usually win championships. And so I've seen in Donovan Mitchell every single year a guy that just keeps taking another step. He just keeps another step and another step. And he's a guy that I don't think we've seen the ceiling yet. And he's a guy who's driven. You know, this is something that I think is special when you have someone who says, you know what, I'm not okay just being here. My legacy is significant. My legacy is more than just being a guy that makes it to the first round of the playoffs.
Okay, so how is this series won? I'm wondering, here's what I'm going to throw out there. I don't think you have to have Mike Conley. I don't think you're going to see Mike Conley likely for these first two games. He's questionable today, or he was questionable yesterday, turns into a no-go earlier today, the Jazz announcement. I think he's not going to be – I don't think he's going to be able to go even next game. I'm not worried about Mike Conley not being a part of this lineup. I think this Jazz team has finally gotten to the point where they go, look, fine, bring your Paul Georges. We've beaten that guy before. We've beaten Paul George in the playoffs before, and he wasn't that great. You know
right.
what? Joe Ingles can harass Paul George, you know, on a given night, and he'll have to do it. But I do think that the real thing that scares me is Kawhi Leonard, and I'm glad that Donovan Mitchell's on the floor. I'm excited about it. I wonder if Rudy is going to go to the next level, too, of being tougher than everybody thinks that he is, and which is not. We even go, can that guy get tougher, please? And he's the defensive player of the year again, and he's done it three times. But guess what? I want him to be tougher. If Rudy Gobert can be tougher than he has been in the playoffs past, and he got tougher this year as a player, I think that this team can win this series.
I think Rudy Gobert's had his best year with the Jazz. I think Donovan Mitchell's had his best year. I think that this Jazz team, I think the regular season matters. I think it's important. And I think what's so important about it is that you had times during the year where all of these contingencies were practiced and they were executed in games. So, hey, guys, we're not going to have Mike Conley. Okay, here's what's going to happen.
Right.
And this Jazz team has gotten experience dealing with adversity throughout the year. And with all of that adversity, they were still able to hold the top spot in the NBA. And it was everything. I mean, they had Conley and Mitchell out at the same time. They had Donovan out for some time. The one thing that really cannot happen to the Utah Jazz is Rudy Gobert. I mean, he is without question, and I completely agree with you, Alex. He may be the key to every bit of this, a guy, and not just this series, but I think the rest of the finals.
But he's maybe even more so in this series than any of the other ones in front of him.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe in a different
if you're
vein.
If you're going to win a championship, he's got to be his best version of him that we've ever seen.
Look, if they're going to win a championship, Jordan Clarkson's got to show up. I mean, Joe Ingles has got to show. I mean,
not the inconsistency.
No,
we've
it's got. I mean, Bogey's got to show up. And I just feel that, look, if the Jazz have ever been prepared to win, it's right now. This team, and they've vetted themselves out, and they've you know, forged the hardened steel that it takes to win in the playoffs, and they've done it through, you know, struggles and losing and frustration, and so. I just really think this is probably the most complete team in the NBA and the most complete team ready to win a championship.
Let's take another break here. We've got an MVP, a very special MVP coming up right here live from right across the street from Vivint Smart Home Arena, corner broadcast house. And, man, we're just watching. The people watching is amazing. And the car watching is amazing. And the people running their bags back to their cars is amazing. Next on KSL's Unrivaled, we've got MVPs. You don't want to miss this one. This is one means a lot to Scott, means a lot to the folks here locally, especially to Utah fans. So stay right here with us. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crown tonight's most valuable player, according to Scott.
According to Alex.
Most valuable player.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery on the corner of Vivint and KSL Broadcast House, coming to you live. What a beautiful evening. I learned something a long time ago.
What'd you learn?
I learned about cranes.
Cranes.
Cranes,
the bird, you know, the beautiful
no,
bird.
No, like a construction crane. You know, the.
Oh,
yes.
Not the crane kick.
No, and not Bob Crane either, by from Hogan's Heroes. But I was driving in, right? And I go past downtown and loop back around from 6 North. Faster way to get here, if you wanted to know. And I couldn't believe the skyline changing in downtown Salt Lake, but there's cranes everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yes.
And they're building stuff here, and it's just. I don't know. It just feels exciting to me.
The
atmosphere is exciting tonight. The town is being built up, and we're here to witness.
Hey, dare I say, our city is growing, and L.A. is just,
it's kind of tapped out.
They have the cranes that are knocking down buildings.
I mean, where are you going to grow in L.A.? You can't go out in the water.
That's true.
Can I do something really quick?
Yeah, let me
hear it. I got to give a shout-out to Edna. Okay, Edna is a waitress at La Casita in Springville.
Oh, look at that.
My favorite place in the world to eat. And she goes, I go home every night, and I turn you guys on, and I listen.
Hey.
So I had to give Edna a shout-out. I saw her today, actually, and she goes, I love your show, love listening to you guys. And I said, I'm going to say hello to you on the radio, Edna. So.
Well, Edna, we appreciate it. We appreciate you being a part of the show. You know what that means? You've become an honorary MVP.
There you go.
Yes, an honorable mention MVP on the evening. So very excited about it. Now, Scott, as we get things going here, I basically set apart this segment for you. So I'm going to basically – so today when I woke up to the news that that former Utah head football coach Jim Fossil had died, I knew exactly what that meant to – well, not necessarily the feelings, but I know exactly what that meant to Scott, because we've talked so many times about your time at Utah – being recruited by Jim Fossil, playing for Jim Fossil, leaving right after he had been let go, and that being a big reason why you left, because you're like, I'm not going to stick around after I don't know who the next guy is. Prolific years that you had there, and when I saw that he had passed away, I called you and I said, hey, did you see he passed away? He goes, did you read my article? And that was what I went to, and I said, oh, my goodness. And I go and I read this article, and I'm sitting there, and I'm reading it, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, Jim Fossil wasn't just your head coach. This was a major piece of your life and what became Scott Mitchell, the Utah football player and the professional athlete afterward.
Yeah, and it was really something that in the moment was very important to me, trying to figure out where I should go to college and the impact that has on your life. And I didn't fully appreciate the significance of how much that meant to me until later in my life. I mean, just seeing – what that decision had done for me, and it really was the best decision for me personally in my life, and he was an integral part of that. And as I look back on his life, I mean, I was completely shocked and saddened by what had happened. And he's a guy that you wouldn't say he felt like he lived a healthy life and what have you, but I was saddened by it, but he was a guy that just wasn't afraid of being bold. You know, we talk about our show about we do bold and stupid things all the time on our show. And he was not afraid of the big moment. He wasn't – I mean, I'm a kid from Utah County in the 1980s. I'm an LDS kid who's a quarterback who has deep ties to BYU. Is a I was a BYU fan my whole life growing up. And he had no shot at recruiting me, really. I mean, he had no shot, no business, no nothing. There's no way in the world that I'm ever going to go to Utah. And he was persistent, and he talked to me and called me on the phone in the moment that, I was looking for an answer, whether it was just him, calling or whatever. I don't know. I don't really care. All I know is that I was looking for an answer, and he's a guy that called me, and I picked up the phone, and it truly changed my life. But then I looked at it, and watched when he was coaching for the New York Giants, which – the New York media and how brutal that can be, and he did something that I can really appreciate in probably the toughest place to coach in the world, maybe. And the team wasn't doing well, and he said, "Look, I'm not going to put the blame on anyone else, right? I'm not going to blame my quarterback. I'm not going to blame my assistant coaches, which often happens.
That's like the main move.
Yeah, I mean,
survival
guys get,
of the
you know,
fittest.
Coordinators get fired during the year. I mean, you
blame everybody else.
Yeah, you see that all the time, right? Quarterbacks get benched. He goes, this is on me, and this team's going to make the playoffs. And this was like in November where the team was struggling, and you're like, wow, that's a bold move. And guess what? The New York Giants went to the Super Bowl that year, and he was a guy that just really wasn't afraid of that moment or going after those things that seemed impossible. And he just had the courage to do that. And I always really appreciated it. And he didn't have success at Utah. He was very, very average, below average coach when he was there.
Well, in terms of wins and losses, for sure. But like the list of the interesting thing is that one of the things that was put up on KSLSports.com today was it showed these insane numbers that you guys put up during your time there, because I think 1988, you guys ended up with 545 yards a game. And I thought, well, that's not going to happen with a Utah offense anytime soon.
Well, no, because you got a defensive-minded coach who's in charge of things. But that's the whole thing. He was a guy, Alex, who was – look, he was willing to be creative and innovative. I mean, the crazy offense, a lot of people remember the Daffy Duck offense. And people call it the Mickey Mouse. It was a Mickey Mouse. But it was really designed, and it developed out of necessity. We had like six or seven offensive linemen get hurt in training camp. We didn't have enough guys, so we're like, how can we put five bodies out there and keep them away from the action? And they said, here's a legal formation. You can put him as close to the sideline as you want. You just do your 7-on-7. So, but he had a willingness to kind of step out of the box.
Right.
And I just remember he gave a speech shortly before he was fired, and he said, look, I figured this out. I know what we need to do as a team. And he spelled it out, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. He nailed it. He's finally figured this out. And unfortunately, it was too late. You know, his tenure at Utah was done. And I just can appreciate him having that struggle and watching him go through that, because I think all of us, Alex, the success in our life is built on a foundation of failure. And he was a guy that was able to rise up from the struggle he had at Utah and have a very successful and prolific coaching career. I mean, it was remarkable how he came back from that and was really a great football coach.
When you think about like the time, how was it that I know that a big part of the story was that you had been seeking basically some personal inspiration as to where you're going to go, and then the phone rang and it was Jim Fossil.
Also
a very spiritual man.
Well, I didn't want to take his phone call. I was like, I'm in the middle of a prayer. I'm trying to get an answer here. Why are you?
You're rolling your eyes.
I don't want to talk to you. So I halfway listened on the phone. I'm just like, okay, whatever.
It was the feeling you
and
had.
Then in the middle of the phone call, I can't tell you a word he said. And in the middle of the phone call, I just had this just incredible feeling of just warmth and peace and calm that I hadn't felt throughout the whole recruiting process. And I knew in the moment what it was, and I knew that my prayer had answered, and I knew I was supposed to go to Utah. And you have to imagine that was an amazing feeling, because I lived in Utah County. I mean Gifford Nielsen took me to football camps when I was a kid.
They had you recruited, they had you in the back pocket. BYU was tampering all those years,
of
man.
Of course they were.
Come on.
It was all illegal stuff. That's how BYU rolled. And so, that's how powerful that feeling was to say, you know what, I don't know what this is, but I've got to go here. I didn't tell him on the phone.
Let me ask you this. Because like after all is said and done, who was the best coach you had? The one that, like, you go, oh, I learned the most from him. And I don't want you to feel pressured to say Jim Fossil, but
no,
out of all the guys you had, who was the person
He wasn't the guy that I learned the most from, but I learned a lot from him. There were drills that he actually worked with me that stuck with me forever.
Yeah.
And about relaxing when you're getting hit in the pocket and how valuable that is. And it helped you to keep your focus downfield. But, I mean, really the guy who had the most impact on me was Coach Shula. He was this legendary coach. He had gone through his own failures before I ever met up with him. So I got Coach Shula really at his best probably, and it was tough. I mean, he was a tough coach, but he shared with me things that were invaluable to me that really have helped me just in my life. And I don't think that was his intent. I mean, his intent was to win, right? And that was it. But there were these things you kind of learn along the way that you really appreciate and probably don't really fully appreciate or understand them in the moment. But as you go through your life, you go, wow, that was a precious moment and such a valuable person to have and to be mentored from. I mean, I've had some great coaches, even the ones I don't like and really don't care for. I've learned something from everyone that I've been around.
I was like, Scott, we got to go the whole thing with this. And I thought maybe we wouldn't do it. But you know what?
We did it.
Full MVP with it.
I could go. Yeah, thank you for doing that, by the way.
You know what I'll do? My MVP is the MVP, Nikola Jokic. Big man with a special talent. That's my MVP tonight. And he literally won the MVP today.
He did it today.
So amazing.
Yeah,
all right.
Good on him.
He's
a heck of a player.
Jazz fans walking across the street getting ready for game 1 of the Clippers and Jazz right here at Vivint Smart Home Arena. News traffic weather right now. We'll come back. Second hour of the program. We've got some college football to also talk about. Stay with us right here on KSL's Unraveled on KSL News Radio.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, Jazz fans wandering across the street over to Vivint Smart Home Arena, filing in. Don't worry, you're not late. The other game is taking way too long. Don't worry about it. You're going to be fine. Yeah, so Jazz are going to tip off here in just a few moments. But this game, the Philadelphia and Atlanta game is taking just a little bit longer. So at some point they'll kick it over just to another.
Because they call more fouls in the postseason.
I mean, they're still we're at 8-10 almost, and the game is still got 5 minutes left there in Philadelphia. So and the
Sixers, and 5 minutes is like 20.
Well,
minutes.
And the good news is they're up 20, and so they're up 17. So at least they'll be able to kind of just cook through this one maybe a little bit quicker. But yeah, Jazz are not tipping off yet against this Clippers team. Now, my question is this, Scott. I brought up Nikola Jokic winning that MVP.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, I'm not sure if the Jazz are ever going to have an MVP. But, again, once you become a quote-unquote superstar, like Donovan Mitchell is kind of coming into that moment, if he's able to get them to the finals and maybe even to a championship, he'll get into that upper echelon of high, high-quality guys that people want. My question is does that put him then in the conversation automatically for MVP next year because of the year he's had so far this year, or because of an offseason that he's
Yeah, picking? I don't think the Jazz, even if they won a championship, I don't think the people would say, yeah, Donovan Mitchell, although he is the focal point, you know, the linchpin.
Right.
I mean, he's the guy that's so important to the success of the team. I think people would look at the Jazz and go, well, the Jazz won in team ball. And he was that important cog in the team ball, but I don't think everyone would go, and I think it's that he's this just incredible, otherworldly talent. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is a great player, but I don't think people would perceive him like a Steph Curry or a Nikola Jokic. Or even a Luka Doncic. I don't think they would. And so, even if he won, and it's not a knock on Donovan at all. I mean, I go back to Michael Jordan. You know, early on in his career, he was clearly amazing early on and often, but he was like, yeah, but he didn't win championships. And then he kind of took a little bit of a reduced role. But he'd already established himself as just this otherworldly talent. And I don't know that Donovan has done that in his career. He's certainly gotten better and been amazing. And, you know, I mean, he is a talent, but the perception is, I don't think he's established himself as that. Just, you know, we got to beat the drums hard just to get him in the All-Star game. It's not like he's not this just absolute first choice, clear guy. And I think he has to be that guy in order to really win an MVP.
I want to change gears just a little bit here. I can't ignore the fact that the Jazz are about to tip off here in just a couple minutes against the Clippers. But the conversation has ramped up about the college football playoff. And I think that any kind of attention that they can pay right now to this and the pressure that the public can generally put on college football and the powers that be in college football to be able to move this thing in the direction of getting an expanded playoff, I think that's the best for the game. Because you don't have a lot of time to mess around and compete these days for television. The best thing you can do is to give yourself an expanded playoff. And right now, according to some sources, it looks like that all signs are pointing to that 12 team, not 6, not 8, a 12-team playoff that could go like this. Automatic bids from your P5 champions, okay? So there you go. That would be a way that would be an amazing way that the playoff would be expanded to a team like Utah, not just being the champions, but you wouldn't have to have the conversation of, yeah, but did they do enough to be above a one-loss Ohio State team versus whatever. They're in to that 12-team playoff as a P5 champ. The part that makes me excited, there's one G5 auto bid also.
Right.
The one that excites me is the 6 at-large bids you're talking about. What a swath you could potentially get of wild card teams.
I mean, from this last year, you'd get a Cincinnati, you'd get a BYU,
right.
You'd get, you know, some of these teams.
You'd have more of those Boise State type teams that would show up and make that difference. And guess what they do when they have the chance? They show up and play in these playoffs, and the big teams go, well, we don't want to play them. You know why they don't want to play them, because they get up for an opportunity like this because they don't know if they'll have another one. And a 12-team playoff make so much more sense than the four-team format where we're still battling for, you know, the rich getting richer type situation that you see with Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and then fill in the blank maybe with, you know, another team. I was about to say a Pac-12 team, Scott, but I didn't have one come to mind.
Oregon State.
It was going to be thrown.
Yeah. Washington State.
Yeah, your Stanford's.
Yeah, and no, it's a great thing to, you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds in that everybody's invited to the dance, huh?
There you go.
I like the dance reference.
But no, that's the thing. No, you can't say the dance. So,
because that's...
The big dance is basketball.
Oh, well.
What would we call it?
Everyone's in the luau. They're all invited to the luau. But here's the thing. And this is why I really like the idea of this. One is I like that they're seriously talking about it because that means they're seriously considering it. And it's not just – it's not lip service. It's not like, we're – you know, we'll do it the – you know, the just kind of token response or discussion. It's the football fans, college football fans, they want to watch great football.
Yeah.
And they don't just want to watch it when the playoffs or the bowl games or whatever. And so if there's not this pressure anymore to say, well, we got to be undefeated. If we're not undefeated, then we're not going.
If you have two losses and you're the Pac-12 champion,
awesome.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You get to the playoff.
And I think anyone who understands football and the fact that there's not that many games, it's so hard to
go undefeated.
It's so hard to go undefeated.
How does basketball work? The undefeated team almost never wins a national championship.
I mean, it happened this year.
They go 30-0 or 31-0, and everyone goes, yeah, but no undefeated team has won since 1978. You go, well, yeah. You know why? That 28-6 team who finds a way to get better throughout the season, they're the ones who end up being national champions. So a two-loss, Washington team going a couple rounds in the playoff is a way better situation than just snubbing everybody.
But what does that mean for the regular season? It means you're going to get an Alabama playing a better non-conference schedule. You're not going to get one of these eye rollers who go, yeah, we're not going to watch Alabama. And really, it's across the board. I mean, it's all these teams that, you know, that are these marquee players that are these marquee programs. They're going to actually have to play and they're going to want to play better teams. And that just helps everyone. That just helps everyone in the process.
All right. This is amazing. You guys aren't late. Don't worry about it. They'll wait for you. You've got late rollers up. It's fine. Oh, congratulations. I'm glad.
You don't have your purses, though,
all this
right?
No bags, though. You're going to get kicked out, all right? So, all right. Fans filing in, and they're wondering if this thing's tipping off still. And the answer is no. So I think that there's a lot of people who are still wondering if this thing's going to end. So let's take a quick break here, Scott. When we come back, we've got more to talk about. The other side of the argument on whether or not this should expand to the 12-team playoff. Scott actually has a couple of cons to this. I don't know if I believe him yet, but we'll see if he can make an argument. We're going to come right back. More to go right here. It's KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
Hey, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell.
What was that?
Three, two, one. Alex Keery. We are on the corner of Vivint and KSL Broadcast House. I love the images of a mass of fans walking across the street when it's their turn to go, and then there's one woman sprinting the opposite way holding her bag.
Yeah.
It's such a great visual. We're getting pretty close here to the start of the Jazz versus the Clippers in round two, game one. Couldn't be more excited. It's fun to be broadcasting out here tonight. Alex, I'm going to just kind of start this whole thing off if you don't mind me saying.
Right,
so.
Oh, we're still doing the college football playoff.
Yeah, I saw this earlier today, and we've talked ad nauseum about this, and we're clearly proponents of an expanded playoff system. We do not understand it. It's probably the most perplexing thing to me in sports. Why there is not one. There is not an expand. Why they don't have a playoff, a real playoff, to determine a national championship in college football. I just don't get it. It's every other level. Like even like city rec football and flag football, they play the playoff for a champion. But when I saw it today, I was like, well, they're actually debating the pros and cons of doing this. And, like, we can sit here and give you a million reasons why, right?
Why
and we've done that, and we just did that. And so now you
– just saying the money is good enough, and that usually will that end
should,
up being the
right,
answer.
That should be their answer, and right. That is their answer. But I was like, okay, well, let's see if we can try to see the other side of this. I mean, is there another side? Is there something we're missing? Are we blinded by our bias to not really look at – why is it so precious to only have these four same teams every year, and it's a computer, it's a group of people in a hotel deciding by some reason why these teams should be playing. It's not well, let's just put them on the field and have them play. It's just who we feel is the best team, and it just baffles me. So I was trying to figure out, what are the reasons why? What are the reasons that they would ever not want to expand? So I'm going to throw –
you could look sideways at this and go, yeah, I don't know if I like this idea or not.
And so. Just so you know, I don't know that I agree with them, but I'm trying to look at this. I really am. All right, here's the first one.
Okay, what is it?
I think that the bowl traditions,
yes,
and it's the late seasons. It's the great bowls. It's the New Year's Six bowls.
So you think this could ruin
even,
the Rose Bowl?
Even things like the Holiday Bowl. You know, some of these bowl games. I guess that they're concerned about those traditional relationships, those traditional bowl experiences, and these cities that own these bowls and these bowl committees that own these bowls. I mean the Rose Bowl's been around forever, and it's an amazing tradition, and so I guess that would be a concern
if
as
it
to
turns
why.
Into just a round in the playoffs, quote unquote, right? Is that what you mean? Like, if it's just
second
round bowl this
yes.
year. Yeah. I mean here's the thing, the Rose Bowl does this thing where they act like they don't want your money. They're like, well, it's the Sony, it's the Rose Bowl presented by Vizio. And you're like, come on, in the end, if you call yourself presented by PlayStation, presented by Vizio.
It's the PlayStation Bowl.
Then you saying Rose Bowl first still makes it that you're about money, though. It doesn't
right.
It doesn't matter. We still see it like that. So I wonder if I can see what you're saying, like, the reality is that what outweighs that is the amount of garbage bowls that there are. And the ones that will suddenly become more important, right off the bat, you're going to have games that you're going to actually want to watch now, right? You're going to see games that you're like, hey, I'm not just being forced to watch this because it's on ESPN2 and it's December 23rd and I have the day off. You know what I mean? These could be super important games, and we've mapped it out a little bit before. The same thing they already do. Rotating teams, rotating these games around, rotating them around to be the national championship 1 year and 1 year not. I mean, these are all still going to get a cut of that TV deal. The insane thing is that this hasn't happened yet. That they haven't expanded their horizons and just gone, you know what, we're going to do it. And they do it, and they didn't expand it in the name of what? Tradition, right? They're like,
right.
No, we got these traditional bowl games. It's like, you know what makes bowl games traditional? Is that they were good games at some point. Now they've turned into too many of them, and they're garbage. So that's where I'm at on this one. Got any more for me?
I really think that the traditional matchup in bowl games, I think it will be enhanced if you get a better game. I just with something more on the line, I think it makes the bowl game. And I think the bowl experience can be the same. I mean, so much of the bowl isn't the actual game. It's all the things leading up to the game. The Rose Parade is still the Rose Parade, and that's a big deal.
Yes, it is.
All right. I think another concern about this is the length of the season, that it takes these student-athletes out of the classroom all the way through, clearly, their Christmas break.
This
it
is a big one.
It doesn't give them the time off, and it could be in some way like a risk to their health or their emotional well-being. I don't know what it is, but – that the season goes on too long is a concern.
Okay. right now going on right now is the World Series of the College Softball World Series.
Correct.
Which is, by the way, it's like one of the things that I really like to just go, oh,
it's your guilty pleasure.
I will pick up a softball game on ESPN at any moment. These World Series games are amazing, and they're really fun to watch. These tournaments last forever. Super regionals were last week. The World Series is this week. It's double elimination that's going on. Okay, that's just that. How about basketball, right, where we go, hey, here's your season. It's 35-plus games. We do tournaments at the beginning of everything. In October, they're already going.
Right.
Okay? Football starts in what? September 1st,
August 1st is when they go.
That's
to
when
camp
starts. Yeah. But, like, actual games, we're talking September 1st, maybe August 30th, right? So, but that season is over by December 20th.
The end of November.
BYU's last game this year, end of November. Same thing for the Utes, right?
Pac-12 championship is usually the first week of December.
So that goes, what, 3.5 months? Okay,
yeah.
Basketball goes – end
Sunday,
of October,
Monday, Tuesday,
yes,
Wednesday.
End of October until April, the first week of April.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're wondering, like, which part are you going to argue about? Those same kids that are playing basketball are taking tests during the same time that these football players are. Okay. But here's the final nail in the coffin of that argument that the presidents of the universities try to pretend like, oh, these are student athletes. They're the most important thing ever. It's because they're students. That's the most important thing for them. It's not. They know it's not. Look, the Ivy League, I think we could argue, is probably into academics, like legitimately into academics.
Right.
They are part of the FCS championships in college football. That is a playoff system that the NCAA determines their national champion with.
And this is the real students first, you know.
Right.
Athletes second.
They already participate.
They're not being taken out of the classroom.
Yes.
They're not being
and it's a few
extended
round,
few, yes. you know, longer
it's a
than
a few rounds of playoffs.
And
they travel. They do all of it.
And they play 12 game season. They do.
So
the
what's
whole thing.
The problem? So what's the problem, right? Jazz out to an early lead here, 7-2. Scott.
Oh,
this series over, man.
Has it started?
This
already?
Series is over. Yes. When you say already, it started 20 minutes late. But yes, or 17 minutes late.
Oh, hey, there's,
but yeah, the game's underway.
Well, I was so engrossed in this conversation here that I agree.
10-5 now, Jazz up. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We will we still got more stuff to talk about here, Scott. As we get going here and we're watching this thing, I can't help but imagine where we were last year at this point when the Jazz were in the playoffs, the quote-unquote playoffs, and they were in the bubble. And then here we are. We watched out of the 18,000-plus fans who are going to be likely filing into the stadium tonight – we saw probably, what, 8,000 of them walking just in front of us?
Cause a good chunk of people.
You split up kind of these corners over here. This is the main parking is over here. We saw all these fans. How exciting was it to see everybody filing past, watching the Jazz, and not a single person thinks to themselves, man, I'm grateful the Jazz are even here. They're thinking to themselves, we're going to do this for weeks. We have seen the same people wandering by that we saw last week, and they're expecting to be here next week. They're expecting to be here in the series after, and hopefully an NBA Finals in the next couple of weeks. Imagine how insane this thing will get when mainstream, non-following basketball fans jump on board, because that's what's going to happen in the Western Conference Finals, and then the NBA Finals turns into insanity, absolute insanity.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I do know that sports has a significant part of our society's fabric. And you look at these people who are Jazz fans, it's something to rally around. We feel better about ourselves when our team wins. And even if our team doesn't win, we rally around, hey, we're still going to be great supporters of our team. We're going to be with them when the chips are down. And it's just something that draws people together. And we talk about the Utah and the BYU rivalry, and look, the BYU people don't like the Utah people, and the same.
No, we like them.
No. That's a fake nice. Come on, it's a fake nice.
Hey, we like you guys. Put a pretty decent team together every so often.
I know, but the Jazz is different. It's like everyone likes the Jazz. Everyone is a fan of the Jazz, except for a few Laker fans that we run into. Which they're all on vacation right now, but so it's just a great thing in our community, and there's a great energy, there's a great excitement, there's a great hope here for this series. So we look forward to being here, and we we also expect the Jazz to be here for a while as well.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. All right, let's take the break here. News, traffic, and weather. When we come back, we've got more to go on the program. When we come back, we've got so much to discuss still. That is 30 minutes away. Someone just gave Scott a go Utes like you're not a fan. Well, you're wearing that navy blue. It throws them off. You know what I mean? So that's Jazz blue tonight, right? Is that what that is? We're going to come back. We've got our NFL roundup. Got a lot to talk about when it comes to the NFL. And the two-minute drill also coming up in just a little while. Stay with us. More to go. We'll have a score update for you in game one of the Clippers-Jazz right around the corner. Stay with us on KSL News Radio.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Geary. Yes, the game has started at Vivint Arena. We are still outside and about ready to wrap up the show here. The Jazz down by 7 at the end of the first, so 18-25 to the Clippers. Sometimes, Alex, you get too pumped up early.
Yeah.
And
Got to settle down, man.
Got to settle down. Jazz will settle in. Everyone just calm down. Things will be fine.
The Jazz in the first quarter... The Jazz in the first quarter have taken 23-pointers.
In the first quarter?
First quarter.
Oh, my goodness.
They took 23-pointers in the first quarter. So they're on pace for 80 in the game here. Is that is my math right?
Yeah, wow. they're trying to Mike Tyson the Clippers in the first. They're trying to knock them out
now,
in the first round.
Well, hold on a minute. Let me switch it around. Just erase that from your mind. Let me give you a different headline. Jazz made 5 3-pointers in the first quarter, Scott. 5 for 20 in the first quarter. Good for 25%. And you know what? That was after they were it was a real struggle. It still is. I mean, they're down 25-18, and it could be a lot worse. Neither team really doing that great. Donovan Mitchell with 6 points in the first quarter. Jordan Clarkson with 6, but both of them are 2 for 6. Between them, they've taken 12 in that first quarter. So, look, the Jazz are going to do what the Jazz do, which is shoot from three. The Clippers also shooting from three. And I think the Jazz just need to settle down a little bit. 25-18 here at the startup of this game one with the Clippers. So I'm not that nervous about it, although the text messages are rolling in from across the board. I got so many people weighing in on this thing's over. We're terrible, you know. And then there's the, wait it out, that we're going to win this thing by 20. You know, it's like nobody's right, you know. But one thing is certain. Jazz fan right now is feeling very, very anxious. But that's the way we are at playoff games here at home. All right, Scott, first thing up at the two-minute drill here. I was looking at this story, and I thought this was interesting, which was the NFL fullback Danny Vitale announces his retirement on LinkedIn. I thought of all the places, you know, social media is one place to do it. Apparently he announced his retirement on LinkedIn. What do you think about a business account for your football life, right? I didn't know football players had LinkedIn accounts. Maybe he's just putting himself out there like, hey, will you please hire me in a business role because the NFL didn't work out for me.
Look, it's a generation of social media and wherever you find it and however you find it. If someone's going to retire from the NFL, I think it's a good sign that they at least are doing it through LinkedIn. Clearly he has a vision on the future.
I'm ready to be your senior vice president of fullback operations at your school.
A non-existent position in the NFL forced me to retire.
Yes.
I was not big enough to be a lineman and not fast enough to be a real running back. So I've got to be a LinkedIn member now.
So the Nets have apparently been told to stop displaying their timer. They have this thing that they do. This is some interesting stuff here. Now, not that this would make a big difference when you lose by 42, but a career 72% free throw shooter, He's been 2 for 10 in those first two games, Scott. He's 72%. Now, he says that they say that it's because, and the NBA agrees, they say the team has been putting a stopwatch on the Jumbotron to call out any 10-second violations on him, on the player. Because you can't take more than 10 seconds at the line, right?
Yeah.
So what they do is they put up a big timer. So when he looks up, it's up there on the scoreboard. He sees it. And so the NBA said, "Look, I like your game. I like where your head's at, except for the home team cannot have any effect on trying to sway the guy at the line." I thought it was very tricky. It's like the Jazz used to have the guy who'd throw up the big megaphone, right?
Well,
like,
right. It's one thing to have gamesmanship, right? And these players, they're really good. Come on, don't give me this. I'm distracted, kind of stuff. I think they need to just, you know, settle down, but. But it's also Giannis, right? I mean, he's a guy that's a superstar. So it's like, yeah, okay, we understand that. And, you know, if it's a lesser player, I think it's like, yeah, we don't care, whatever.
I'm just trying to watch this Jazz game, Scott. Will you please stop bothering me with your radio show?
Yes.
Jeez, man. Heaven what are you trying to do
forbid,
over
we,
here?
We do that.
So here's – remember we talked about John Shire last week, the guy taking over for
right.
Coach K?
Yeah.
He says he's not afraid to follow Coach K at Duke. I wouldn't be either. I think he's making $3 million a year. I wouldn't be afraid to take a $3 million paycheck for the first couple of years. Why not? I mean, would you be afraid to follow in the – I mean, like – you weren't afraid to take over for Dan Marino. You can kind of see where this guy's at.
I was chomping at the bit,
right?
To get
and, you,
my
and you're even saying I'm ready. I'm just as I could probably get out there. I want to prove myself.
I think you know the conventional wisdom is you know never follow a legend, right? And I don't know that that's necessarily the case because you've been groomed. I mean, if you're a guy that goes, hey, I want to learn how to be a great college basketball coach, and I get to spend X number of years with Coach K in meetings, in strategies, in recruiting, and to really understand a program, to really know how to make things happen, yeah, I would say I'm now ready. And I think a lot of – if you look at great coaches, whatever sport it's in, they have a pedigree. They have a pedigree that goes on for generations, for years. Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells – are so ingrained into the present coaches in the NFL today, it's insane. It's absolutely insane, and so I don't know that it's as much a big a deal, and you know he should be excited, regardless of the money.
Regardless of what's going on with the money, yeah. Next up here, Scott, we talked about Nikola Jokic winning that MVP. I think that's a big deal because it wasn't some. He's a guy who just was like, I'm in a market that nobody pays that much attention to. I'm look, centers don't win the MVPs
not
that
today's
often.
NBA.
Not
I mean,
today's NBA.
Yeah.
So to do that, you have to do something special, and he did something so amazing this year. And I think that having the year that he did, averaging 28 points a game, but then a 12 rebounds and then 8.5 assists a game. Their point guard, most of the point guards in the league don't average 8.5 assists. Come on, man. I mean, this is an exceptional year for a guy who is an exceptional player, and I really hope he can figure it out against the Suns. I hope he can take over against the Suns.
I think when you watch, these big men in today's NBA, they're impressive. Their range, their ability to move, they're not just planted underneath the basket. It really is just a tribute to just not being kind of put into a box. You know, these guys are creative. They're expanding what their abilities to do, and it's really revolutionized basketball. I think I know Shaquille O'Neal's like, put the guy in the box and let him bang hard. And,
yeah,
just.
It's not a thing.
Power
anymore.
Basketball is not. These guys are impressive, and he's as impressive as anyone out there right now.
As we look at this, and I'm wondering how this, tonight we saw the 76ers come back after getting beat up in game one against the Hawks. They kind of became the 76ers in that series suddenly against the 5 seed. That should be the blueprint for if this game doesn't go your way, Jazz fans in game one. Relax. You can come back and be kind of yourselves in game two as we watch this thing kind of unfold. It's like the Jazz are just not themselves right now. They just are not, they're down 11 right now, 35-23 in the second quarter. And I think that, trying to do too much is a thing. What were you talking – what did you call it? It's doing too much, right? And so if you're Jordan Clarkson –
you just got to do your job.
If you're Jordan Clarkson and you're 3 for 8 right now, that's trying to do a little bit too much, maybe, before the half, shooting, 23 pointers just by yourself. So I just think the settling down part needs to happen. But if they do lose tonight, take heart, Jazz fans. They're going to be playing again on, what is it? What day is today? Tuesday?
Thursday.
They'll be playing again on Thursday. We'll be back out here again. Hey, for Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. We're taking the break here. Dallin hooked us up out here tonight, doing a great job. And Mitchell back in the studio pressing the buttons. For them and for Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Curie. See you tomorrow night, everybody.
K-9-5.
KSL-FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.